It's Border Crossings with Larry London from BOA Music Mix.
Welcome to Border Crossings. My name is Larry London, and I'm so happy to have you with us once again for another great program and a super hour, because today we've got two super artists coming up. Fitz with the Tantrums is here. Fitz and the Tantrums, yes, one of the hottest groups on the rise, and they're here to talk to us about their latest album and their tour. Also coming up in the hour, Margo McDonald as well. So stay tuned to Border Crossings, Fitz and the Tantrums, Margo McDonald, and you, right here on The Voice of America. Welcome to Border Crossings. Very special guests in our studio today. We have heard them before. We've played their music. You've probably seen them on television if you watched Ellen or the Jimmy Kimmel Show, or if you're in a CD store, you can't miss their music. We'd like to welcome to the studios today Fitz and the Tantrums.
Thank you. We've got
Noelle and Michael. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having us.
It's great to have you guys here, and congratulations on all the success. The new album is out now, and the buzz is great.
Thank you.
I like it.
Yeah.
You like it?
We're on a good path, it looks like.
You guys...
I guess we don't have to quit our day job. Oh, wait, this is our day job.
Day and night job.
Day and night.
Now, Michael, you formed the band, I think it was 2008. You decided you wanted to put the group together. And you used the part of your name to form the band. But, I mean, how did this whole concept and idea come to you?
The first seeds of the first songs were truly just me writing songs to get over a bad breakup, healing the broken heart. And, you know, right from the get-go, those first songs, one of the most important things for me as an individual was I've been a singer my whole life, but in that moment, I really finally found my true voice. You know, when you can sing many different styles, the question really then becomes like, what is authentic to you? Mm-hmm. Where you're not imitating, where it's organic and true to yourself. And in that moment of writing the first song for the band, Breaking the Chains of Love, it was in that moment that everything sort of came together. Called my college friend James King, who started laying down sax parts and working on arrangements. I said, we need an amazing female singer. These songs are about love. We need masculine and feminine on stage representing the he said and she said of love. And he said, there's one person you got to call, and that's Noelle. And, you know, a band can take a long time to form, but this was literally 6 phone calls. A week later, we were in the rehearsal. We played that first song, Breaking the Chains of Love, and it was instantaneous. I walked out of the room. I called and booked us a show at this semi-famous singer-songwriter place called the Hotel Cafe in Los Angeles, and walked back in the room and said, guys, we got a show next week. And they're like, well, we don't even have enough songs. And it was like, well, we better get going. And we kind of haven't looked back since.
Wow. That's a nice journey. Did you imagine that this is where you'd be? I mean, when you started your career?
I don't think you really expect any of it. You know, I certainly have been surprised by the amount of, you know, success we've had in such this short period of time, you know, mm-hmm. 5 years with a band, and, you know, we're doing national television shows and, you know, having this crazy happening with our record of, you know, just this kind of like organic happening. It's kind of unheard of with a lot of bands. You know, sometimes it takes you like 20 years to even get that. You know, we've all been in the world of music for so long, you know, to have something where the synergy is just instant. I think for me, that's, you know, kind of what made it special, that mm-hmm. there was this just kind of instant energy, and, you know, there was a comfortability there, you know, with playing with the musicians, and, you know, like we just really felt each other out very quickly. That's rare. So mm-hmm. I knew that there was something special.
And I know that, you know, artists don't typically like to define their style, but you have such a unique style with such a mixture of different eras and genres and sounds. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you define your sound?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, it's like whether you define yourself or not, somebody's going to define it. And early on, you know, especially with the first record, people sort of had this trifecta, indie, soul, pop, mm-hmm. which, you know, the first record was obviously heavily influenced by soul music from the Motown Stax period, you know, 60s soul music. But just as much it was, you know, 80s British invasion bands that were looking at the 60s for inspiration. There was a little bit of indie rock, a little bit of hip hop. It was like a mixture. And sometimes people would just use this one word like retro or throwback, which mm-hmm. it has that element, but we always saw it as a true cross-genre record. So I think going into this new record, we really, you know, had influenced each other so much on the road. We wanted to be a lot more brazen in our conjunctions and trying to make what we saw was a true hybrid record, a true cross-genre record, which I think is one of the hardest things to try and do, because you can fall into these pitfalls. And yeah. what we ended up with, I think, after a lot of hard work, you know, we wrote 40 songs in like a month and a half to get to those 12 that made it on the record, was we were able to create a real cross-genre record that still felt organic and authentic at the same time.
And the album's called More Than Just a Dream. Now, when you create an album, you're writing songs, is it a group effort, or is there one person who handles lyrics and one does melody, or how does a song take form?
I mean, it's different, you know, every song has a different kind of like path and walk of, you know, mm-hmm. coming into fruition. And this record was very collaborative on, you know, More Than Just a Dream. You know, everybody kind of went to their corners and brought in their different ideas and stuff like that. And then, you know, we'd have these late night kind of like writing sessions amongst ourselves, and, you know, Fitz and I would get together and, you know, gel it all and make it a song and do that whole thing. But yeah, primarily lyric and melody normally come from, you know, Fitz and myself. And, you know, like as far as like the process of the music, it's very collaborative in that way. Mm. You know, you have to kind of inspire each other. We have 6 members of, you know, the band, and we all have our different takes on, you know, how we view different parts of the music and stuff like that. And you just kind of have to kind of bridge that. And it was actually our first experience actually bringing in a producer on the second record. We work with Tony Hoffer, who's worked with everybody from Beck to Depeche Mode. And, you know, it was a really cool happening for us to have somebody on the outside looking in saying, you know, this is great, but I think this could be better. And, you know, having that communication there.
Now, why did you call the album More Than Just a Dream?
Well, you know, it's one of the main lyrics in the first single off the record, which is called Out of My League. And it just felt really apropos for us as a band, you know. Our success, you know, we don't make the most radical music, but it definitely was outside the norm. You know, I'm not 20-year-old, you know, kid, you know. Everything about this band has sort of been this amazing path of like, we couldn't get arrested by the business at the beginning, but we just went out, we wrote good music, and we played these shows that we got garnered for, like, putting on one of the best live shows in America. Mm-hmm. And that word of mouth traveled from coast to coast, and people would call their friends and bring five of them to the next show. And it was this real organic word of mouth thing that happened. And for us to even have success on that first record, and now to, like, really be getting into this more sort of mainstream success on this record, it has been this amazing ride, and this sort of the little band that could, this will and determination and hard work where we've literally clawed our way through every moment of success to get here. It really is more than just a dream.
Or I call it like the little engine that could, you know. You think about this band, it could have gone any way for us. You know, we don't have like these huge managers and like all of this money pouring in making our success for us. You know, like we've had to work really hard, and every opportunity that we've, you know, received has bared some sort of fruit for us, you know, whether it was a year after or, you know, a couple months later. You know, everything that we've gotten, I honestly can say that we've earned. We've really earned. And I know that people see that. And, you know, it's amazing to like walk into, say, a studio and have the program director genuinely love your music. You know, it's a rare finding to have, you know, more than one song be someone's favorite. And that for me is just like, that's the gratitude I take home every day.
We'll be right back.
You guys have a lot of fans around the world. You continue to grow and build momentum, and you've gotten all these titles applied to you, the band to watch, and the hardest working band in the business. And
that's the one that we're most proud of.
We'll take it
because we have not stopped for 5 years, so we'll definitely take hardest working band.
And I know you were on tour with Bruno Mars this past year.
Oh,
so that
amazing.
Was fun. And in one of the earlier tours that you guys went on was Maroon 5. And there's an interesting story I read about how you came to be on tour with Maroon 5.
Well, you know, and that's the part of the thing, you know, it's like, as Noel said, we've all been in the music business for a while. And I always say that everything I did before this was like a square peg through a round hole with a sledgehammer. And there was like splinters flying and it was just ugly. I could not get arrested in the business. And there was just this aligning of the stars. It was like this flow. We had played something like 8 shows and there was our local NPR station in LA, KCRW, that had played some of the first cuts off the first record. Some guy, tattoo artist, was visiting from New York, flipped out, bought the record, brought it home. Adam Levine is going to his favorite tattoo artist in New York to get some work done. And he says, Adam, you got to hear my new favorite band, Fits in the Tantrums. He plays it. Adam apparently doesn't like anything, starts tweeting us. We start having a conversation. He comes to a show 2 weeks later. And a couple days after that, we got invited to go out on the road with Maroon 5, which was like everybody jumps up. Hey, we've played 10 shows and we're offered the Maroon 5 tour. High five. And I was like, oh, this is going to cost $25,000 to keep up with 5 buses and 10 semi trucks. And that was the moment where it's like, okay, well, this amazing thing's happening. Everybody, you're going to have to go out on the road and make $0. Fitz, if you want to be able to do this, we still have to pay for the car, this, that, and the other. Are you willing to put your life savings into it? And we all collectively just threw all of our chips in, and it was scary as heck, but you know, we went for it. And that was kind of the turning point of being like a West Coast band to a national band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you had a number one hit on the alternative charts, Out of My League. You know, that's that's huge. You
that's
know, so
huge.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And I know you've also done the song in French.
We did.
So that, I mean, tell me about that. What inspired that?
Well, I'm half French. I was born there. My mom's French. I had to make my mom proud and throw in some French. And we did it on the last record with Money Grabber, where we've recorded a French version for both Money Grabber and Out of My League. It's been kind of amazing because that was our like entry point into Canada and into Quebec. And from there sort of spurned the song actually catching fire across that country. Mm-hmm. So it's just, for me, I love it. It's a little nod. Noelle's studying her French. She takes French lessons. So
I read
it was definitely
much better
easier
than
doing,
I speak.
It was definitely easier doing this the Out of My League version of, in French than the first time we did it, where I literally had to
phonetically spell out the, and he already has an accent, so it already made it kind of slightly harder for me to try to figure out what he was saying.
Now, how about international touring? Is that in the future?
That's happening.
We're going in March to do a couple weeks across Europe. We'll be playing in Ireland for the first time, in Germany for the first time. We'll be back in Italy and
Paris,
Brussels, and the UK. But it'll be a whirlwind.
And what's the response like when you travel abroad? I mean, we're broadcasting to all those countries, so when you're on stage.
We had yet another serendipitous moment was that I was interviewed on the last record by this Dutch reporter, and he just of his own free will sent Money Grabber to the biggest DJ in the Netherlands. That guy starts playing that song every day. So
Gerard
much that the
Ekdom.
Song becomes a hit, and our record wasn't even out there, which motivated, you know, on the first record, we were on a small indie label. It finally motivated them to, like, release the record there. We went to Amsterdam and played the historic Paradiso, which is an old church that is, like, one of the most beautiful venues I've ever been into. Meticulous. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, like, looks so beautiful. And we sold this place out the first time we went there. And another thing, we've done Live from Daryl's House, we went to Australia. First time we went there, we played a festival and we did all these smaller, like 200-300-400 cap rooms and sold out every single one of them. And half the audience was like, discovered you from Live from Daryl's House, you know, which has been this amazing blessing for us.
So for all the things that you've named, and like I mentioned earlier, you've been on some of the biggest TV shows here in the U.S. I mean, what's been the highlight for Fits in the Tantrums so far on this journey?
Well, we just got to do Ellen.
Well, yeah, Ellen was mm-hmm. huge, but I think it's the seeing the growth of our fan base, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, going from this, it's kind of, you know, like whole family demographic, and mm-hmm. then literally watching it spread in every single city that we've gone to, it's just gotten bigger. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, like the teenagers are there and their parents are still there and grandparents are still there. It's been phenomenal to kind of watch the reach, mm-hmm. you know, especially with this record, you know, like I feel like the audience is maybe getting younger now even mm-hmm. than it was before, but it's just so amazing to look across the crowd and see people singing the lyrics to your songs. Mm-hmm. That's yeah. for me is always going to be the thing that takes the cake of every, you know, opportunity we get, you know, that's on the national scale is going to the shows and yeah. watching it
I'll
translate.
Never forget the first time that happened for us. You know, we had, like I said, gotten a lot of support from our NPR station. We did a session for them, and then we went out on that Maroon 5 tour. We were still a no-name band, even in LA, and we came back and played our first show, and we walked on stage, and our record wasn't released yet, but we had played all of the songs on that NPR show, and then all of a sudden, this audience was just singing back to us louder than anything. And I think we all just took this step back because it was like taking over the sound yeah. system. And that I'm definitely in agreement with Noel. There's nothing like watching an audience sing like every cut on the album.
Do you have a preference over playing in the 30,000 seat show when you're on the road, or would you rather play for a more intimate, smaller crowd?
They're all different.
Yeah, depend. I mean, you know, it depends. Sometimes it's, you know, the festival is like you're so far removed from what just happened. It's 30 minutes set, and then mm-hmm. you get that hour long set in this, you know, 1,000-cap room, and, mm-hmm. and the energy is just so intense because it's literally bouncing off the walls, yeah. and you're really seeing what's happening, you know. But I think they both have their rewards, you know, like the fact that you're able to play in front of, you know, say 30,000-40,000 people and they're all with you.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a visual, like you're like, wow, that's a lot. I can't even see where that crowd ends.
Yeah.
Ooh, crazy is what they think about me. Ain't gonna stop cause they tell me so. Cause 99 miles per hour, baby, is how fast that I'd like to go. Can't keep
The album is out now. People want to get it. They can go to your website. They can go to Amazon and iTunes, wherever albums and CDs are sold. And it's called More Than Just a Dream. Now, how do you keep in touch with people on social network around
the
world?
We do all of our. We've always done all of our own social medias. It's not somebody doing it for us. When you send us a tweet or an Instagram or post on our Facebook page, it's us.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Well, you guys, you know, like I said, you guys right now are attracting a lot of attention and a lot of airplay too, and it's just a matter of time before you're number one on the pop charts, and I assume that's
your
a goal.
To God's ears, as I like to say.
I assume that's the goal. I assume that's what you're working hard for every day and, you know, putting those miles in the vans and the buses around the world. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite part of the business? Is it the live performing? Is it the writing?
I love performing, but I'm also a studio guy. Like, to me, like, you know, when we're working a lot of times, I love to create a mood for Noel and I to, like, see the picture. So, like, mm-hmm. to get the right, like, reverb sound and, like, something that feels like you've painted a picture that sets a mood, then we're like, okay, well, all of a sudden it kind of gives you more of a direction of, like, what is this song? That's what I, you know, mm-hmm. who was it, Nietzsche or something that said, all art aspires to the condition of music. Mm-hmm. You know, and music escapes language at so many times. You can convey an emotion without ever saying a single actual word. Mm-hmm. And so I love creating that sonic palette that creates a space for us to tell a story, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys tell a great story.
And thank you.
More Than Just a Dream is the new album, and I hope a lot of people go out around the world who are watching and listening and buy your album and support you. And I know you're going to do a lot of shows around the world in 2014, so everybody around the world is looking forward to seeing you guys. So thank you so much.
For thanks for a great that. Interview.
Well, thank you for coming in. It's Fits in the Tantrums, Michael and Noel. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Larry.
This is the Voice of America. I'm Larry London. It's Border Crossing. Stay tuned.
Wants to bet that this bubble wrapped heart is not open yet. Oh, I hold a steady hand, each and every move so carefully planned. For you started a flame, set fire to all my cards in this lover's game. It may not be perfect fit, but I like the way that you kiss. It may not be a perfect fit, but I'll let you be the king of my heart. Before, felt it and I dealt it, showed it to the door. But now I'm gonna bet it all, just hoping that your love is worth the fall. It may not be a perfect fit, but
my heart. this bubble wrapped heart. It may not be a perfect fit, but I like the way that you kiss. It may not be a perfect pair, but I'll let you be the key. Let you be.
It's always a pleasure to welcome artists into our studios and to bring new music to you all around the world. We have a guest today in our studios whose name is Margo McDonald, and she's promoting her brand new album, Canvas, which is, I guess, your fourth album.
Yeah.
And so how long has this album been in the works for you?
This one, about 3 years.
Three years.
Definitely the longest coming.
And this is all original material that you have written yourself?
All but one.
There
are 12 songs and one cover, Massive Attack's Teardrop.
Well, we welcome you to the Voice of America, to Border Crossings. And I guess you're a native D.C. person. Are you from this area?
I grew up outside of D.C. in Arlington,
Arlington,
right over
Virginia.
The bridge.
Beautiful area.
Went to school in Georgetown. Mm-hmm. At the Duke Ellington School of the Arts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now that brings something to mind. You were 10 years old, I guess it was, and you were performing and writing with an opera at that time. So how did you transition from opera and classical music into what you're doing today?
Well, I always wrote music. I wrote my first song when I was 7. And I started taking voice lessons and kind of studying classically and auditioned for a few of the Washington operas and got into the children's chorus, and it was an incredible experience. It kind of rode both of the worlds for a little while. There's one point in high school where I was recording a rock album at night and singing opera during the day. Eventually I had to choose which path to take, and I wanted to follow my own.
So what made you decide on rock music instead of opera music, because you were obviously doing both and good at both?
I know, to keep following the creative outlet. I love the opera world, but you see what's on the page and
right,
you do what the director tells you.
Yes.
And I've always been a bit more of a free spirit.
All right, well, since you're set up to go, what exactly is this machine called that you you function
this
with?
This is my loop pedal.
Loop pedal.
I call her Ella.
Ella. She has a name. And why did you name it Ella?
For a cappella.
Oh,
I
love
cheesy,
it. I love it. That's it. All right. Well, Margo McDonald's here, and Ella's here. And who else? You brought another.
This is Alan, my
pianist. Hi, Alan. Welcome.
Hello.
Alan's going to play keyboards for you.
Yep.
And so you're going to show us how Ella works.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing some live vocal looping.
All right. This is kind of fun. The last time I saw one of these, by the way, Katie Tunstall was here, and she brought this in, and she did her little thing with one of these.
She's excellent. Now, I don't plug my guitar into it. It's all me.
So it's all you making all these sounds. Here's Margo McDonald.
If you say that you want to leave, I will let you be. Box the memories and kiss your cheek, but my heart will still beat.
I
doesn't rest, rest. Ah, ah, ay, you. Running out of breath, breath. Ah, ay, you. Speed of sound.
Wow. Beautiful. Beautiful. Sounding great. Wow.
Thank you.
As I'm sitting here listening, I'm not sure if these artists, you know, will be familiar to you because you're just a young 21, but people like Natalie Merchant, formerly of 10,000 Maniacs, yeah. and the Cardigans. I mean, you definitely have that kind of sound. Even Sinead O'Connor, you have that timbre, that sound, that very beautiful melodic voice. You can change your range and your sound. So that's great. And it's just amazing the technology that's, you know, that allows a musician to do so much more. You've put so many people out of work, thanks to Ella. You've got all the backup singers are gone. The percussion's gone. But at least the keyboard's still there. The machine can't do that. So Alan's
still has it. Could I afford a 20-person choir behind me? One day.
That's it. Well, you don't need it with that machine. Now, how about touring internationally, since we're broadcasting internationally, do you do much of that?
I haven't yet. I hope to pop over to the UK in the springtime.
And you get a lot of mail from fans, I'm sure. And are they around the world as well?
Yeah, surprisingly. Many years ago, I started kind of getting fans from overseas, a lot in Europe. And
yeah, that's
some
great.
Some in Japan. And so it's just so funny.
You're just young. I mean, you're very young, 21. You may or not like that. One day you will like that. But you are, you know, very young and just kind of beginning this journey, although you've been doing it since you said 7, you wrote your first song.
Yep. Plug it away.
Where do you hope to be in a few more years? Where do you see yourself down the road? I mean, because, you know, here you are 4 albums in, which is a lot of people, you know, couldn't even fathom the first album at 21, but you're 4 albums. So where do you want to be in another year, 5 years, your short-term plan?
Still making music.
Still doing music. Do you want to mentor young musicians and people, or do you?
One day. One day, absolutely.
So, I mean, in the subject matter that you write about, it's not your typical breakup stuff.
Well, this last album, it certainly touches on a lot of topics. There are a fair amount of the classic love songs, of course. But there's a song about the city that has some of the DC Metro sounds mixed in there. And a song about finding happiness and different subjects that have touched me.
And on your wish list of who you'd like to work with, who would be the top 3 people?
Ooh, Rick Rubin is an amazing producer. Brian Eno, the same. And where it possible, Jeff Buckley.
Pick some big ones. Some of the biggest. Aim high. That's great. So let me ask you this. You're on stage. Here's the show. So much of it is built around what Ella does. Ella doesn't work one night. Ella decides I'm on strike and doesn't work. How does Margo McDonald go forward then? Does Alan then all of a sudden have to pick up the slack? Because I see you making some of the noise and the beats and whatnot. So, I mean, what happened? Or has it not happened yet?
Luckily, Ella's the trooper.
Is there another Ella? Is Ella 2 in the box in case?
I have Ella is my second loop pedal. I have another one that I think we've dubbed Pete. A smaller one, the first one that I started with, that were an emergency to happen, that we'd probably turn to that, or I guess I'd just give a more intimate performance with my guitar and piano. I started on those 2 instruments, so
right.
I just have to go back to the basics.
And that builds character. I mean, you may be afraid of the day that happens, and inevitably there will be that day.
It would be fun.
And
it would certainly be a unique show for people. Yeah.
So as you have grown since 7 to where you are today over the years, and each album has grown along with you, how do you find that this album is different from the last album and from the first album?
Very different. The first album I did was very, very folk poppy. I was 11 at the time. Lots of songs about following your dreams. Very appropriate. And with my second album, I kind of dove right into the rock world. My third album was a little bit more eclectic, but definitely still in the rock realm. And this one I've just completely branched off into whatever it is I'm doing now.
Right. And as a songwriter, I'm sure you're writing songs all the time. They're just coming into your head and there may be dry spells, but most of the time there's ideas and different mm-hmm. inspirations and whatnot. So what do you do with all these songs? Are you tucking them away for a future album? Or what does a songwriter do with the 100 songs, only 12 make it to an album? There's, you know, 88 that don't. So what happens to those 88 songs?
Some of them get knocked on the shelves. Some of them are potential for the next album. Mm-hmm. Some of them are still little bitty ideas that are still kind of growing and shaping over the years. Each song has a different pattern that it takes.
Margo McDonald's in our studio, and we're talking about her brand new album, Canvas. If people want to get the album online, I would assume Amazon and iTunes, your regular music locations. But if they want to go to your website and buy it from you and maybe contribute to your costs, where would people go?
My website and Bandcamp.
And what is your website?
MargoMacDonald.com. Mm-hmm.
And MacDonald, you're Irish?
Scottish.
Scottish?
Scottish, yeah. A little bit Scottish, a lot of French.
Wow. So MargoMacDonald.com. And can you spell that?
MargoTMacDonald.
And how about the Facebook and Twitter and Instagram? You're doing that too, I assume. So if people want to keep in touch with you.
Yeah, Facebook.com/MargoMacDonaldMusic.
Margo McDonald Music. And your Twitter handle?
Margo McDonald.
Easy enough. And you respond to all your people yourself.
Yeah.
You don't
yeah.
pass it on to your people. Your people. No. My people respond for me.
No, I usually respond. And it's all the info's on my website.
Well, you're a pleasure to talk to. You're a very beautiful girl, very talented girl. So we're going to ask if you'd do another song for us.
Of course.
All right, that'd be great. What's this one called? And is there a story?
This is Teardrop. It's the one cover on the album, and it's kind of my reimagining of it.
All right, Margo McDonald on The Voice of America.
Nightmare of my time. faithful mirror, fearless I pray.
That sounds great.
Thank you.
I see you a little beatboxer.
A little bit. I'm a beginner.
But you sound great. I mean, that's just, it's amazing. It's very melodic. It's mysterious. I can imagine the neighbors by your house, whatever, they hear all the sounds you're creating. So after the tour ends, and then what's the plan for you in 2014?
Still playing this around, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Recording some new music. Mm-hmm. And just getting out there. Mm-hmm.
So the album is called Canvas. It's Margo McDonald. And I'll tell you, it was a pleasure to have you in our studios and to hear your music, which is refreshing. Oh. I don't know that you can describe it. You use the word rock, but is that, I mean, how you think?
Lately, I've been calling it indie pop a cappella.
Love it. I love it.
Gives enough of a question mark.
Yeah, well, it works. It works. Uh-huh. You're innovative. You're certainly refreshing and a pleasure to have on the show.
Thank you so much for having
me. Yeah, and I hope you'll come back and see us again after the album's out and you do a little touring. If you're going to tour internationally, when you do set some dates for Europe and mm-hmm. whatnot, let us know and we're happy to have you back.
Absolutely.
All right. Margo McDonald's our guest. It's the Voice of America. And thank you for coming in, Alan, as well. We appreciate having you on. Man of few words, but a lot of keyboards, but few words. My name is Larry London. Thanks to the whole crew for putting together today's program. This is Border Crossings on the VOA Music Mix Network.
Larry's on Twitter. Follow him at BCVOA.